Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your source for Starfinders, news, reviews, and interviews. I'm Alexander Agunis, No Direction's everyman gamer, and I'm joined, as always, by the most intrepid Starfinder this side of the galaxy, James. James, we are here. It's episode 100. It was 100% the plan the whole time. It wasn't a weird coincidence that involved, like, what, several months of hiatus and whatnot?
Oh, look at that thing again. I forgot to make my mic live again, because I have definitely produced this for 2 years, and don't forget buttons.
Oh, no, James is... You can't hear James. Should we start over?
No, it's fine. It's good. It's fixed.
Okay. Cool. It's all fixed. Yeah, so James and I were just talking about how this is the 100th episode of Starfinder, of the No Direction Beyond.
Yep. Yeah, we're just very excited that we managed to line up Starfinder Core 2's released our 100th episode. Man.
And I'm very excited that we didn't actually make you silent for an entire episode like last time.
Yeah. So the podcast came out fine. That's good.
Right. So we're here today. Today, obviously, we are news, reviews, and interviews. And today we're going to be doing the review. We have I wouldn't say we're not a deep. We are kind of a deep dive, but like it's deep if you're looking at like across everything. Isn't that correct, James?
Yeah. I think a lot of people get stuff from like shorts content, and yeah. So a little bit deeper than that, because we think that a lot of these things deserve a deep dive, and with our time that we have, which is we shoot for an hour, is not enough to actually deep dive much. So we were talking about doing class reviews and things like that as like combo episodes, doing like three or so at a time, just because class design is a bit simpler in this, I think, than in Starfinder First Deep. That's
not I don't think we're going to have to like tear it apart quite as hard. Yeah. But if you have a thought on whether you'd like us to see dedicate individual episodes to each class, or whether you'd like us to do the spellcasting episode, the martial class episode, you should join us on nodirectionpodcast.com, where you can give us your opinions in our Starfinder 2E channel and let us know what you would want. Otherwise, we're going to do whatever we feel like we typically do.
Although the next book will probably be GM Core, me and Alex are talking about.
Yeah. There's actually like a lot of stuff coming out in a short period of time. So like we have this book that's out now, Murders at Metal City just came out. I have that over in my bookshelf. And then we also have GM Core, and then Alien Core comes out in November, like on November 25th. So like I think James and I have like a boom, 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 boom for the next like 4 months. Like it'll be Christmas time before we could really just like start hitting classes, but it's something we want to do.
Yeah. And like, we could make subsidiary content going over classes, but they would be shorts features. And at that point, that is literally just advertising for Paizo's game, which is, you know, cool and all, but I'm not doing that for free.
Yeah, no, we want to advertise for us, me and James, No Direction Beyond, forever. 10,000 years.
10,000 years forever.
Yeah. Cryptwalker in chat said, wait, Alien Core is November. I thought it was October. I saw it was in November on IGN, but maybe that's wrong. I was trying to get to Paizo's site to verify today, and it lagged out, as Paizo's site sometimes does. So,
Grandpa fell asleep in his chair again.
That's all right. Hopefully they will get a new website before Starfinder 3rd edition.
You know, there's a very good chance that we might have a different web infrastructure by that time, so they will have to.
Yeah. But you know, one thing that I'll say about Paizo is that their website might be a little bit janky, but you can't call this core rulebook janky, can you?
No, this is a Cadillac of a rulebook as a new player.
It's gorgeous. I adore how this book looks. James, do we have the ability to put pictures on screen for people who are watching us live or on YouTube?
I do.
Yeah, let's just put a couple of these spreads up. You could pick your favorites. But what I really like about this is, as someone who has worked a lot with tabletop role-playing games, the typical pattern that you see is parchment with red and black as like the color motifs. You see this in Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition. Pathfinder 2nd edition does this, but adds like splashes of green. This book is like, now we're going to do our own thing. And it's like purple and pink and like Starscape blue. And it's so pretty. Like, as someone who is very gay, this book makes my gay heart sore, and I hope that it makes your heart sore too when you see it.
Yeah, look, it's just visually appealing and easy to get into, and the spreads I think are there's the consistent characters throughout. They're really making a lot of use out of the iconics.
Yeah,
to really give it like a through line.
I was chatting with Dustin because, as many of you know, Dustin runs a second edition Pathfinder game that I play. And Dustin was telling me that, like, one of the things they wanted to do when looking at this book was they wanted to put a bit of focus on Chick-Chick and Day, because they're new characters who are joining the roster of the Iconics for the first time. And you see a lot of them in this book. So if you like those characters from the new novel that's coming out, you'll see tons of art of them doing funny things in this book.
Yeah, there's plenty of that.
There's lots of that. But then there's also lots of the other characters, too. Like, there's this gorgeous spread in the introduction of Obaziah just blasting this creature. I know what that is, but I don't remember what it is. It's one of those guys with, like, the leech heads. They were in first edition, but I don't remember their name. And she's just blasting it with a laser gatling gun. It's very good.
I'm forgetting their names, too.
I'm pretty sure there's Drift or Space, Deep Space. And I'm pretty sure that there are two G's in it.
Yeah, it's like a Migo type thing. It's just like, here, yeah, this could be out in like a Cthulhu mythos and it'd fit.
It's like Migo, but not made by a racist. It's very
good. Yeah, also I think these things like go through space and hunt people that are scared.
Yeah, yeah. Con265 in chat says, and we don't have dates for Galactic Ancestries or Tech Core. No, we don't have those, but I mean, If I was a betting man, I would bet that Tech Core is probably going to be the Gen Con release of next year. But I don't know that for a fact. Yeah. That typically we know the Gen Con release in a year in advance, and a playtest followed by a year to put the book together, since we just had the Technomancer playtest earlier in this year. That feels right to me. But again, I don't know. I don't have any insider knowledge about that. But just from doing this since 2015, that'd be my guess.
Man, that's a long time. Also, yeah, Garagackle.
I told you there were two G's.
You're right. And Con got it on the mark. I see that name looks exactly familiar because you fight that in a couple of scenarios.
Yeah, it's very good. So, the first thing that this book does is in chapter one. It's a section that, James, you read pretty heavily, right?
Which one? Sorry, I wasn't listening.
Chapter one, the introduction.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I specifically read the interactions that they did for examples of play, because I had purchased the Konosuba rulebook recently, and that had a really good, like, the first almost quarter of that book is just the people that made the game and helped design the game, playing a game, and then doing, like, a live replay of it.
That's pretty cool.
So it was like, oh, that's really cool, and then I see this version. And this is appropriate.
It's appropriate.
Yeah, because the Konosuba role-playing game is not as complex, and it's honestly a alteration of a different system. So if you really needed other stuff, you'd go to the other rulebook, because it's meant to be a fun splash. But also, that book was like $11, and I think MSRP new was $15. So
that's not much of anything. I guess if you want to play a cheap game, you could play Konosuba. Konosuba is a fun anime, too.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, looking through this, I was like, oh, I, you know, this is interesting to see an adoption of this, because I also think I see this more as a thing going forward, more like in plays. I mean, not that I haven't seen it before, but I feel like they're getting more explicit with it, designers in general.
Yeah, definitely. I like it. I think it's good. I also think it's really funny, like, having known most of these people, like, you can read some of these lines that say they're from Dustin, and I'm like, yeah. That sounds like Dustin. Like the one from Chick-Chick, played by Dustin, says, a splash of red would look great on that silver medal, but not if it's Dai's blood. Don't look at me like that, Zamir. That sounds like that's the listen, as someone who has played with Dustin plays in my first edition Starfinder game, who has played with him for 5 years. He says random stuff like that all the time. That's absolutely a quote from a game. I guarantee it.
And they go, it's the standard stuff of how to play. There is an introduction, and then there's a how to play section at the very end of the book that has the actual rules. In general, the beginning part I think is pretty clear. It's a little bit wordy, but that's just the system. And it even does, I think, a good job at explaining what to do when you level up. There are some stuff that could probably be highlighted or bolded, like the highest amount of stats you can have or where your stat boosts come from, because that kind of gets lost in this chapter, but it is repeated in other chapters. So.
Really like this section on page 20 where it like has like a sample of the character sheet and then like puts numbers on it so that you can reference it while you're reading how to make a character. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that might be helpful for some people. I know, just coming from a different system, when I was running the playtest, still am running the playtest game, I had to use a different, I think I used Hephaestus just to double check people's maths on where they got stuff from and where it was going to.
Yeah.
And they sometimes they would miss like a paragraph. It's like, oh, you also get a boost here.
Yeah. I know for me, like that guideline for the character sheet, I would see all those numbers and be like, nah, we just balling. Yeah, and I would just write it down. Yeah. but also I've been playing tabletop RPGs for like 20 years or whatever. So like, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that if that's helpful for some people as a visual tool, cool. I like it. It's neat.
Yeah. I think also thus the explicit like explainer in leveling up that every level, if you're trained, you should probably be updating things plus one is a big thing. Cause I remember once again, having to tell people in the playtest game that yes, you do get better as you level up. And that is weird if you come from another game like Pathfinder First Edition, where that's not a given.
Yeah. I find it really interesting. So like, I know that you haven't read a ton of the second edition Pathfinder core rulebook, but in the Pathfinder core rulebook, they had like a chapter in the core rulebook specifically about the Pathfinder campaign setting. Mm-hmm. And here, all of that information gets folded into the introductory chapter of chapter one. So like, you're learning about how to make a character and it's explaining to you, oh, there's a spot here for picking a deity. Let's go over what some of the deities in this core setting are, kind of a thing. I like that. It's neat.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's good. Until you get scenarios that these deities matter,
yeah,
it is kind of abstract, as are kind of the planets.
Yeah. So let's talk a bit about ancestries and background. I feel like we've gone over a chunk of them throughout our initial like looking at the playtest rules and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I think it would be fun to do that now. I'm sure that most people listening to this podcast will know. But there are a number of different ancestries, which are like the different playable creatures that you can play as. And there's way more in this book. Well, okay, I was going to say there's more in Starfinder 2nd Edition than 1st Edition, but that's kind of not true because 1st Edition had updates to all of the Pathfinder ancestries as well. I believe we're getting those in Galactic Ancestries, which I think is due out sometime next year. But as we mentioned earlier, we actually don't have a release date for that book yet. Mm-hmm. So until that comes out, I guess you're just going to use the rules for playing an elf from Pathfinder, which is not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, it'll be fine. It's not the worst.
Yeah, you'll be okay. But if you want to play one of the ancestries that's specific to this game, your choices are Android, Barathu, Human, Kasatha, Lashunta, Patra, Sheeran, Skittermander, Vesk, Yasoki. And then, as you may or may not know, each of those has a list of heritage options, which are like, these are not quite subspecies, kind of a mix between subspecies and like culture, depending on your ancestry. So like, if you're human, it's about like, oh, you're more adaptable, you live zero gravity, these things affected you as you grew up. But like, if you're a Sheeran, I believe there's one where the Sheeran just get wings, and that feels more like subspecies to me, where the human ones feel more like culture. It varies from example to example. But I bring this up because there are also two universal heritages, which are heritages that any ancestry can take. They are Borai, which is basically you are an undead, or not quite dead, but not quite undead. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. Then there's Prismini, which is it's like being a Ifriti or they changed all of those names going into the remaster. But whatever the partial elemental genie-kin in Pathfinder is called now, Prismeni is kind of like that, but instead of being elemental, you are of the Drift, which the Drift, for those of you who don't know, is essentially the hyperspace parallel dimension of Starfinder. When you jump into hyperspace, you are jumping into the Drift.
Yeah, I view the Prismeni more as like navigators from 40K.
Yeah.
Because they're just things that are inherently in tune to do this travel. Because one of their abilities for the Prismeni is you just can be a Drift beacon.
Yeah.
that's straight navigator stuff.
Yeah, I think that's like the 15th level feat, right? It's like their most powerful feat.
I thought that was earlier on.
I could be wrong.
Let me double check. I'm not tripping and didn't move stuff around in my head.
Well, while you are looking that up, so one of the nice things about playing an ancestry in Starfinder is that the first page is all about, it's like an overview of who these ancestries are, a bit about their biology, a bit about their culture, where they're from in the campaign setting. There's like a list of beliefs, commonly held morals and values. Obviously, you don't have to take them if you don't want to, but they're there. And it gives a good overview of the different ways that character exists in their culture. There's also a list of, let's call them species statistics, where they are statistics that every member of the ancestry has. So like if you're an android, you have 8 hit points, you're medium, your speed is 25 feet, you get a boost to dexterity, intelligence, and 1 free ability score of your choice, but you also get a flaw to charisma. You get common as one of your like basic, it's the common languages. There's like a list of categories. And so you can pick from 1 plus your intelligence modifier from any common languages that you have access to. And then you also get low light vision and constructed, where construction basically means you are essentially a construct person. And you also get lots of cool feat options for all of them. Like if we're talking about android, you get things like nanite surge. You could pick dark vision with the night vision adaptation. You get emotionless if you want to be a robot and have no emotions. You can do that. It is fine. And then, of course, like I mentioned earlier, there are heritage options. The android has 4 of them. Are fun.
Yeah. Yeah, Prismeni, that's just an ability, a trait that they get.
That's awesome. I love that. That's real. So that's just a thing. They don't even have to pick it as a heritage or a feat. They just get it.
Correct.
That's amazing. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So let's, rather than go over each ancestry in depth, let's talk about a couple of things from our favorite each, like 2 or 3. Well, how are you feeling, James? What do you want to talk
about?
Yeah,
sure. First is Lashinta. I like that they changed, not changed, but the first image you usually see about a, species in a book is kind of what you think about it, and for a while the Lashinta were just the sexy aliens, and now you have front and center this acne looking Gomez from Adam's Family as your representative, and they kind of change the dynamic of how their physical attributes and mental attributes change based on their gender, and I think that's fun just to expand it. Also some of the psychic features that they get. Sorry, I'm flicking my mouse too much.
You're fine.
Yeah, I think in general, the expansion of the Lashinta's lore and changing their abilities and making them, like, I feel like there's just more options in the Lashinta rather than you're a smart, sexy lady or a dumb, sexy man. Like, you're either Kat Brannigan, Zap Brannigan, or, like, Scarlet Widow or something like that, or whatever, Black Widow, whatever that hero name is. It just feels like it opens up that species a lot.
Yeah. So I am a big fan of the new art for the Patra. In the original like playtest version of them, they use the Sandcat art, which is fine. It's like when you are small instead of being medium, it is one of the, it's called Sand Roamer. It's one of the heritage options that they get. And I don't know, I just like a lot of the new art. Like, I appreciate when someone takes the time to show me what shoes look like on someone that don't have human-shaped feet, like plantigrade, ungulograde, whatever. Good stuff. For this case, for the Patra, they've got these, like, really cool, like rocket boots for, like, astronauts. That's fun. In terms of, like, actual abilities that I like, I feel like this ancestry does a really good job of tapping into, like, Patra's love of music and dance as a cultural part of like living on Polanus. And in this case, I really like Song of My People, which is you perform a mournful dirge tinged with a supernatural grief that compels the soul of a lost comrade to return to its body. You may not know this. That is a description of a caterwaul, which is like an Irish folk myth of like a sound that supernatural cats can make to bring the souls of the dead back. That's amazing. I love that. It did not call it caterwaul at all, but like I read that and I was like, I know what this is. I know what this is.
That is a deep cut. I would never have thought of that.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's really cool.
Yeah. The Sheeran also get some stuff, some of their alternate like heritages, like Swarm Exile, which is like, yeah, you were part of the Swarm last Tuesday, but now you're here. And I think that is also just a cool expansion of their species here.
Yeah, I have never been a big fan of Kasatha. I thought that they were kind of boring in Starfinder First Edition because they were just these dudes on a ship who came here from another world. And, oh man, I guess we can't conquer this place. We'll just live on our spaceship. And I thought they were kind of boring. But the options they get here are really cool. There's like a good mix of like traditional Kasatha martial artists combined with like some cool weapon abilities. There's some really good things that like pay homage to their like cultural features. Like one of them is the masked feet, which is like all Kasatha always cover their lower mouth. It is extremely taboo to show anything below your nose in public culture among Kasatha.
Yeah.
So they get a feat that gives them bonuses for like upholding that at level 5. I think that's really cool. And you just have some really cool, like, I like Disciple of the Cycle, which kind of gives them like not quite Solarian abilities, but like it, minor ones. And it references the fact that the major Solarian philosophy in the pack worlds comes from the Kasatha. I like that.
Yeah, ties it back. Yeah, it does flesh them out. They do seem a little bit more deep.
Hey, we got some like superstars in chat. We've got Dustin as Kitsune Warlock, and we have Shan, who is a common freelancer on Paizo products. So look, we got people. We're doing it. We're going over the things. We're being amazing. Yeah.
The Isoki exist. All their options are exactly like you would expect, and the art that they use is perfect because they just took a guy on the ground and then just like floated him, and it's still perfect.
It's so good. Where he's in the little like jet. It's so good.
He's just over with. It's like he's waiting in line for something. I love it. I love it.
I feel like we'll get angry messages if one of us don't talk about the Skittermanders. And since I played a Skittermander in our actual play years ago, I will be the one that takes the bullet and talk a little bit about Skittermanders. I know I'm such a
martyr for
the
boss. That must be so hard for you.
So hard for me. I love them. They get charisma and dexterity, and they get a flaw in wisdom, which that feels better than them getting an intelligence flaw. Like wisdom as your penalty stat, as someone who just wants to help too much and is not good at reading the room, that feels more Skittermander to me. I appreciate this and think it's really good. There's you know what, it's really funny, I don't think it ever came up with Shivi in our game, but Shivi still had his like little second mouth attached to him. He never grew out of it, and it was one of the reasons why he went into medicine. And there's actually an option for that in this book. So like if I was going to play Shivi, I'd be like, oh, he's an Everwhelp Skittermander. This is a thing that exists now, it's canon, instead of me just making it up and talking about it randomly. The art for the Skittermanders is great. It goes from being cute. I also like all six. It says you put your best effort and focus everything you got at the task at hand, putting all six of your hands, three of your sets of hands into it. ! The next time you roll an attack roll or skill check, roll it three times and use the highest result. Like that's the thing where like Skittermander's saying that they're going to give it their all six. That's the Skitterman version of Plus Ultra from My Hero Academia. It's like been in the lore for a while, and having like this ability that is very flavorful for it is so good. I love it. Yeah. It makes me want to be level 15.
Yeah. Going into Vesk. The Vesk once again are just there. They have all the options. They're my perfect lizard boys.
Oh no, Thurston Hillman is in chat, and he says originally we had it roll six times, but had to change it. I want you to know I respect that needed to be changed from six, but I also would have enjoyed six rolls instead of three. I want you to know that I personally would have liked that, but I understand why you had to get rid of it.
I mean, three makes sense. Three kind of makes it seem fey-like because of all the thrice fold stuff, you know?
No, listen, you gotta do it in pairs. I get it. It's good. All right. So do we want to talk about, I mean, we talked a bit about the Prismeni. Do we want to talk about the Borai for a little bit?
Sure.
I feel like
they're too edgy for me, so I didn't really look into them. I'm just like, yeah, you're dead. I'm never going to play that.
Well, I think it's funny because Borai were in the first campaign setting book that Starfinder ever had, and Prismeni were introduced in the first volume of Drift Crisis. So like not the last adventure path, but like the second to last. So you have like almost an A to Z of these options from Starfinder. I think it's pretty cool. The art is all creepy. It's as edgy as you want to be. And there's like specific lineages where like you can take like every Borai has like the basic abilities, but then there are certain feats that you can only take at level one that say you're a specific type of undead descendant kind of thing. Like one of them is that you are etherealized, which is you became a Borai from a botched resurrection attempt, and your soul is loosely tethered to your body, allowing you to temporarily shield your living form with your soul. That's pretty cool. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool feature. You know, I'm glad that the people that like to play that, it's an option for them.
It's true. Speaking about things that are options, there's a lot of backgrounds. We're not going to review them all.
Oh, there's so many backgrounds. There's backgrounds for everything.
Yeah, you can have like any combination of cool things that you want, you can probably have. And basically a background is kind of like what is the main thing that you did before you became an adventurer? Like, what is your background skill set? So like, you might be time lost, which is fun. You're not from this timeline. You might be a teacher. You could be tech support. You could be a space pirate. There's all sorts of really cool options. They all work fine. You get skill feats and other bonuses. Good stuff. I like VidGamer. What about you?
It all depends on what character I'm playing.
That's fair.
I don't think anyone jumped out specifically at me because they're, you know, these are all things that I would pretty much write. I mean, I guess Dream Prophet.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
And that's a classic one too. That's one of the things I like. A lot of these backgrounds pull their names from different themes from Starfinder. Like, I wouldn't say that all of them are there, but a lot of them are there and good stuff.
That and electrician, just because, once again, it's just a job and I love jobs.
Yeah. So now I think we should talk briefly about classes, right?
Yep. There's a couple of classes in this game.
There's a whole bunch. One of the things I like, so in Pathfinder, one of the things they did is they had like these big, like full, it was basically they took like the Wayne Reynolds pose of each character, blew it up really big and put it on a single page with like its parchment on the background. But here it looks almost like it's the character portraits that the character would play in like an online game, like if I'm playing on Foundry or whatnot. And I really like that. I think that's really cool. It's like, oh, this is my portrait. This is what my token would look like for this character.
Yeah, I think they're good pieces of art.
Yeah. We're not going to go in a deep dive of all the classes like we mentioned earlier. That's something that really needs its own video because we could spend the next 3 hours talking about each class. So instead, I think James and I, let's hit a couple highlights from the going from the remat, from the playtest to this new book.
A fair amount of the playtest stuff I didn't actually get to internalize because I just started running. And that means inherently, because NPCs and PCs don't play by the same rules, I don't have to learn the PC things, which is something that I'm not a huge fan of, but I'll get over it.
Yeah, we'll get there eventually. We'll stay old and grumpy for a while, but we'll play it and be begrudgingly respectful.
I guess I really like the keep on keeping on through desperate times leadership style with the envoy.
Yeah, I really like that one. That one's good. I think Envoy is one of the classes that really got a lot coming into second edition, because before, the Envoy was just kind of like build your abilities with talents, but there wasn't a lot of flavor behind it. Mm-hmm. And like, we see a lot of different kinds of Envoys now, and they all look really good. I think Keep On Keeping On is one of my favorites. I really like Guns Blazing. I think that's a fun one. Mm-hmm. One of the things I appreciate is that the Envoy is definitely much the support class, but it's also able to fight. It's not like, I'm doing nothing.
Come on, guys, finish the fight. I'm running out of improvisations.
I'm running out of snappy one-liners to make you feel good. I mean, I was looking through it, and there are a lot of the changes are things that, like, if James and I sat and went over all of them, they would be very minor changes, and then we'd have to explain to you what they were before, and then it would be like a ton of in-depth like meta knowledge. I just want to say that, like, as overall, I haven't seen anything in this book yet where a change was made by comparison and it was made worse. Most of the time, these feats or these abilities are made more accessible. They're a little bit clearer. They have abilities that feel more helpful and more useful. Mm-hmm. I really like that about these. One of the things that I think is really good is there's a bit more guidance on how the vitality options for the Mystic works. And it looks like there was an overhaul where there was like a trait about things that like use the hit points as a resource or is now gone. Mm-hmm. And on one hand, I like fiddly bits like that. But on the other hand, I think it was very complicated. And that's probably not a good thing for your core book. I'd like to see that in like advanced player core 2, maybe. Start working on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's some of it is confusing. I forget the name of the option, but it's one that allows you to network shield. There we go. As a reaction, when you're hit by an attack, you are able to get a resistance effect equal to twice your level against all damage from the triggering attack or effect. Reduce your vitality network's total by the amount of damage you resisted. What if your vitality pool had less damage than you resisted?
Oh. Well, it's a good thing we have two people at Paizo in chat who maybe can start working on an FAQ. One of the things that I also really appreciate about this book is it feels to me there's more of an effort on being cool than on being comprehensive. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I think that there are a lot of places in the Pathfinder 2E player core where a lot of the options are like, we're just going to throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. And like some of the classes just like one of the things I don't like in that book is how the fighter is just basically like, I have all these feats that require you to take specific weapons. And it's like, what if I want to be a rogue that uses a sword? Like, no, fighter, be fighter.
You're
it's
a fighter, like, man.
And a lot of these feel like they build off of the, not only the class fantasy, but the class mechanics in really satisfying ways. So I like the effort that went into really solidifying these concepts.
In general, every class has traits or abilities or feats that allow you to use different weapons, different ways to protect yourself, and different ways to heal yourself.
Definitely.
So like some of the options, if you look closely, are kind of samey, but I think it's better that there's a baseline for people to be able to play how they want instead of like in, for instance, in Pathfinder First Edition, where there are those options for every class, but it requires almost a PhD level in studies of splat books.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you can't really like building a character in First Edition Pathfinder is very fun and very satisfying when you put the time in to learn the system. But man, oh man, there's a lot of splat books. Like literally 90% of my shelves are Pathfinder 1E splat books. A lot of them I'm an author in. Not all of them. Maybe like 10% of them.
Your boy man talks about a precog witch warper idea. That's a WWE wrestler. I was exactly thinking that looking through the witch warper. Because you just set down your Thunderdome as your area there, because they changed how that works and you can change who like gets impacted by it. I love that idea.
Do you get to choose like the flavor on what your quantum field looks like? Can your quantum field just literally be you manifest a wrestling ring?
Like a spectral ring?
You're ready to rumble!
I don't see why you couldn't. Also, they get trained and improvements in unarmed attacks. So
that's so good.
You could just make your Thunderdome and bring it with you. I love it.
Yeah, I really appreciate the connections for the Mystic is one of the things that I thought was really good. There's a good mix of things that are from Starfinder, like Akashic is back, Elemental is back, but like a lot of them don't feel as like specific. So like in First Edition Starfinder, you'd have Flame and you'd have Thunder or whatever. Actually, I don't think they ever got to Thunder. You'd Destruction. And a lot of these are just like, oh, Shadow. There's like five gods that could use this. Have fun. And actually, one of the things I really appreciate too is I believe that the list of connections associated with each deity is actually in the deity section. Mm-hmm. It's not in the mystic section because it doesn't want you to think that you have to have a deity to be a mystic. Mystics aren't clerics, and I like that.
Yeah. Mystics are more analogous to like oracles, I think, in this game.
Yeah. We were talking before because like James is super into the Witch Warper, and we were talking about signature about spells and how there's no undercasting in this version compared to Starfinder. Yeah.
I was looking over it and I was like building this in my head, and then I was reading it because like when I got this book, I read the very end chapter of how to play the game because I need that, and I think that is important. And then the next part was spells, or at least the beginning of spells. Yeah. I didn't care about the specific spells, just how magic worked. So not being able just to take the higher level seventh and get all the lower spells was just like, what? Oh man.
Yeah, if you want to flip to page 118, which is the Mystic, there's all of the classes that have spontaneous spell casting, essentially from Pathfinder First Edition and Starfinder First Edition, get a feature called signature spells, where they get to pick a limited number of spells, and then they learn those spells at higher levels for free as they level up. And you have a limited number of signature spells. But so rather than learning one and going down, you pick a spell with signature spell, then you get up for free for all of them. But the downside is that if you don't have a spell as a signature spell, you have to literally learn it at every spell level you want to cast it at. So like, it's not like I can learn cure at level 4 and then cast it at 3, 2, 1 or I'm sorry, not level, it's rank in this edition. But I can't learn cure at level rank 4 and then cast it downwards. I have to actually learn it at rank 1, rank 2, rank 3, rank 4, which is a lot. Like if you want to be good at a spell, pick it as a signature spell.
So a little bit of a jump back here. I asked Alex this question in pre-show and he was like, this is content, be quiet.
So I learned that from Brian Costello though. I used to want a pregame and talk about stuff. He'd go, Alex, this is content.
No, that's
save it for the show.
No, that's like, fine. It's perfect. But
I'm like, you're so correct, Ryan. Why do you have to be so right? Now that I'm like a main master of ceremonies on this show, I'm like, oh, Ryan did things for a reason. He had the knowledge. He had the institutional knowledge that I need to absorb.
God, I hate it when the person that's older than me does things for a reason, and then I get older and know those reasons. Dang it!
No. But yeah, no, it's all really good with signature spells. Like I said, if you don't, you have to learn them each, and that's a bummer. And don't do that. It's hard. One of the things that Dustin wanted to add, being Starfinder's design lead, is that there are many feats for the Mystic and Witchwarper that add bonus spells to your spells known, and when they do, they tend to add them as free signature spells too, which is cool. Good job. I like that. I don't like innate spells where you learn it at a level and then you're stuck. It's not fun
unless that spell is awesome.
I guess at the level it's at, if it's the highest level and it's awesome, okay, fine, you win, James. You did it. You've defeated me.
Like, are you mad? Like, would you ever be mad that oracles get cure, you know, at no. every level, you know? No. Sometimes they're just cool.
So like, I still hate Iseph's like creepy robot toes.
That's
like,
all you can think about is his toes, man. His body's up here.
But that's the thing. This portrait of him looks so good. It's amazing. I look. He's got his gun and he's like James Bonding it, and it's so good. just please never show him below like the ankle, and I'll be fine.
just his toes live on your mind 24/7. Let the man live.
Right there. They block me. They're right there. They're
yeah, and toes are always under shoes too.
I mean, but I don't have to see them then.
Ooh.
Oh man, Days is amazing. Have you seen Days where they're like their finger gun is smoking?
Yeah.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
I love it. Very good. Like I said, the token art of the Iconics as the thing that like you see when you go in is amazing. It's one of my favorite things. And there's a lot of things I love. We should move on to the next section though, which is archetypes, yeah.
Sure. I read through them finally and have an understanding. I feel like archetypes are there because they in Pathfinder, maybe Pathfinder 2nd edition, they had classes and they went, these are boring.
Yeah, kind of.
Here is something that you can do if you want more math.
Yeah, well, the other thing that's really cool about them is, this isn't in the core rulebook, but in the GM core, there's an optional rule called free archetype, where every player gets to pick an archetype and you just get a bonus feat for free of an archetype feat. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, but giving people archetype feats for free doesn't break the game unless you're putting Ranger on Fighter, because most of them don't give numeric bonuses, so you can't really stack up. You go wide. It's good. Archetypes are fun. I like how archetypes work in this game. I think it's better to have one archetype that is the space pirate and all classes can take it than having to print the space pirate for every class that will ever exist in this game.
True.
I'm good about giving me unique ideas that are fun.
Yeah. And you know, I like all the just class archetypes for other classes, because like, yeah, if you wanted to do magic stuff as a soldier in Starfinder first edition, there's like four different archetypes you could take that all were functionally the same.
Yeah,
like slight little variances, and it's like, you might as well just give an access to you know, the Technomancer and Anasite.
The next section is skills. Have you seen this hilarious picture on page 184 of a day with like the bubble around their head? It's very good.
I did. This section made me just like get into my head that you play a different game than the rest of the people that live in this world. The DC, because it has flat DCs for things, right? So like,
yeah,
the DC for tightrope walking was like either 20 or 30, and there's no way for somebody that doesn't have class levels to get that high unless you just say they do.
Well, I mean, that was true in Pathfinder too. Like, nobody who is an ordinary person is going to be able to outswim a whirlpool. The DC was like 30.
Yeah, but like, at relatively low class levels, you could bump skills pretty high.
Yeah.
Like, I without being too far out of the box, I've gotten like first levels at like diplomacy at like 15. Like,
I've seen it pretty high, yeah, too. It's true.
Yeah,
you have to be very specialized, but yeah.
Yeah. So like, I gave the expert of a tightrope walker because there's a taut rope skill, and it's hard to do. But it's like,
yeah,
if those tightrope walkers, are they heroes or are they genetic freaks? What's happening here?
A little bit of both.
Yeah.
I know that the general rule in this book is that things will typically tell you what the defenses are, but there are what the skill DCs are, but there are also like default DCs. Mm-hmm. So like on page 184 again, If you're doing something that you don't need to be trained in, then the DC is generally 10. Mm-hmm. If you need to be trained, like if something, you would have to be a trained person to do it, the DC is 15. Mm-hmm. So like if an ordinary person could walk that tightrope and they could do it at level one as trained, and like the GM decides that's appropriate for this tightrope, then yeah, they'd set the DC at 15. But like, if you're talking about a tightrope that is 100 feet up and the tightrope is like wire thin, then yeah, that might be a master DC and an ordinary person isn't going to be able to pass that, which means like that person might either be a master or they might have an ability that says you're a master in this skill, despite being level like two or three, which is something that exists in the game. Like there are archetypes that say, hey, we know that you're level three and you wouldn't normally be able to be an expert, but you're an expert in the skill, even though you're only level three.
Yeah. Also considering Warlock, just roll a 20. Come on. You know? Yeah,
just roll 20.
Fair.
Just roll
20. Fair. The secret to this whole game is just rolling good.
It's true. Just roll high.
if you're high, things aren't problems.
I really like page 185, the skill at key attribute and actions, where they summarize the different things each of the skills can do. And the thing that I really like about it is if something can be done as one or more actions, they use the action symbol. So I can glance and say, oh, I can sneak as a simple action. Cool. Let's do that. Yeah. I'm not going to read the rules because I just need to know that I can do this in action. My GM will know the rules, right?
Hopefully.
I'm winking. You can't see me if you're listening on nodirectionpodcast.com, but I'm winking at all of our audiences who are watching me live as my arm clips in and out of reality like a witch warper. All right. So there's like, you said that one of the things you were confused about was how you craft, or was it how you earn money?
No, it was just crafting in general.
Yeah. Crafting is a little bit confusing. There's a couple things that are very in-depth. Crafting is one of them. The other one that I think is earned income, because as you can see, there is like a organized play style chart of like what like the degree of success compared with the level that you are rolling. It's a lot. So have fun. Yeah. But there's also rules for like learning a spell. It's good. I think that overall the skill section is good. Uh-oh, are we getting funny in chat?
No, I was just laughing because I was looking at the earned income chart, and even if you fail, you get one credit, which is enough for a wheelchair to get yourself
home. Yeah, you can buy a wheelchair! That'd be really relevant in our Savage Tide games right now. Oh, fun stuff. So, what was one thing about skills that really piqued your
interest? That they existed. I'm gonna be real. They're skills. They just kind of tell me how to play the game.
Yeah, that's true. There's it's the thing where like the system is fine, it's good. You roll a die, you do the result that the die says, good stuff.
Yeah.
I approve.
Yeah, it looks like there's enough stuff to deal with corner cases like force movement and stuff like that, and yada yada. It seems comprehensive, even if sometimes I'm too stupid to understand it on first read through.
Yeah. Do you wanna gush over feats for a bit? Like the skill feats, the general feats and stuff?
Oh yeah, I mean yeah, totally. I haven't looked at any of them.
None of them?
No.
You don't just sit there and drool over feats like I did?
No. I spent time reading and rereading the how to play section of this book.
Oh, that's fair. So in this game, in addition to getting feats from your class at every even level, you get a skill feat at every even level. And then you get your ancestry feats at like first, fifth, ninth, so on. And then you also get general feats at, I believe it's third, skip for five, seven, it's like every four after third, seven, 11. And there's like a whole list. And so any feat that's a skill feat is usually also a general feat. They have the little trait tags on them that tell you which is which. But there are some feats that are not skill feats that are only general feats, and you can only pick those in general feat slots. So there's like a lot of customization you can do. Most of these skill feats expand, they either make skills easier to use or give you new ways to use skills. Or if you are taking general feats, they tend to generally improve your stats and statistics. They might give you an extra train skill. They might give you more hit points. They might boost the Temel rank of your like saving throws or whatnot. So there's a whole bunch of different things that can do. They generally tend to be not as flashy or as interesting as class feats, but they are very cool in expanding the breadth of what your character can do.
Yep. There's just a lot of stuff like recognize spell, which it's weird that it's a feat to me, but whatever.
Hey, but what if you're a sorcerer who like manifested your magic out of nowhere and has never gone to school, and therefore you don't know how to identify spells like a Sori in our game in Savage Tides? A Sori does not know how to identify magic, but Bernard went to college for that. He deserves it. He has a feat. He deserves that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just like coming from Pathfinder First Edition, that's just a skill point. or you know, a skill rank, and it doesn't cost the reaction to do.
That's fair. Okay, that's fair. It doesn't cost a reaction to do. You just look at the thing and know what's happening to you. Go, oh.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So one of the things I really like about skill feats that I want to talk to a bit, because I come from having a significant amount of Pathfinder 2nd Edition play and writing experience, is this book is much better at giving really cool high-level things for all the skills to do. Athletics and Intimidate in Pathfinder 2nd Edition are infamous because they have these amazing one-action abilities that you can get. One of them is called Scare to Death, that's reprinted here, where you literally make a Intimidate check, and if you roll high enough and the person is low enough level, they literally die because you scared them in shock. it's called Scare to Death for a reason. And because of that, Intimidate and Athletics are generally seen as the most powerful skills in a game that, I mean, I wouldn't say that Pathfinder goes out of its way to put more emphasis on combat, because the game wants you to do story and do overworld mode too. But when all of your game's mechanics and all the major abilities of all of your classes are based around the combat grid, combat is kind of the focus of this game.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. There's a war game core at the heart.
Yeah. Yeah. And so with that in mind, you look at this and it's like, oh, okay, well, I can be a legendary troll and I can use a single action to, it demoralizes somebody essentially, but if you roll really high, you confuse them. You give them the confuse condition, which is really funny. There's a lot of skill feats like that where it was like, okay, well, we might not be able to make every skill athletics or intimidate, but we can make sure that a lot of these skills have cool things that you
can. Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm glad they're there, and I'm sure we'll get more.
Yeah, absolutely. We just got to lock Dustin in a small room, probably his office, and make him pump out an infinite number of skill feats. I'm sure there'll be no design repercussions for that. Take notes, Thurston. Next round, we have equipment. I love this picture of like the Vesk selling equipment. Am I wrong? Is that not the same Vesk in a sleeveless t-shirt from Starfinder Society on page 232? Like, I think that's him. Doesn't the one who's with the Acquisitives?
Oh, sorry, I was looking at the other vest that was lifting. 232. Oh,
yeah, I mean, that's a good vest. There's a lot of, like I said, there's a lot of great art in this book.
Oh yeah, that's Joel Kazama from the playtest, actually, as well.
Oh, I love it. That, so good.
That's like the same art as Joel Kazama.
I like continuity. I like the fact that if you've played this game for a while, you can look at this book and you can recognize people. I haven't seen a picture of Keskadi yet, but I'm hoping that I get to see a Keskadi picture someday. Let's talk about gear, because that's the section.
Hold on, is Chat clowning on me for his name? Is it not Joel Kazama? Am I wrong?
Joel Zakama, they're saying.
Joel Zakama. Okay.
Joel Zakama is what they're saying.
Got it. Okay. Look, I can say stuff wrong. It happens.
Yeah. That's funny. So I think that the equipment section of this book is one of the most masterfully made sections of this book. The design is great, but I'm like, from an art direction standpoint, this is really good. James, can you throw page 239 on screen, if that's cool?
Yeah.
Cool. So one of the things I like about this is that typically you'll have like, oh, here's one page of like a bunch of armor and item and gear, and then here's a whole bunch of pages of words, and here like the gear is kind of spread out close to where the items are. And I like that they go out of their way to pick items that you see characters using in the other art in this book. As an example, those micro goggles look suspiciously like the goggles Dai wears, and basically Dai wears in every single page. Like, I love it. Mag boots, really cool. I'm pretty sure we've seen Kemen analyzers from, I can't remember her name, but she's the iconic biohacker. And please, Paizo, don't delete her. She's the best Kasatha iconic you have. it's not hard when your other one is Altronis, but yeah. So I also really like the breadth of items. There's like just a lot of good stuff here. I like the little details on the world building flourishes of them. A good example is on page 242. They show a picture of what a med patch looks like, and the med patch is like insignia to show that it's a med patch is a cross like in the real world, but there's a Skittermander around the cross, and it's really funny. I love it. Just looking at the design for the different like props in this book is really good.
I like that they went out of their way to make serums in the like flasks and other things like that, like juice pouches.
Yeah.
Because we view serums just as injectables.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I like that too. It's funny. I also like the armor that they show on pages, it would be 247 and 249. My favorite one is that they go out of their way to show what armor sets look like on other races that are not, or ancestries that are not humans. So in this case, you have like one of them, the Aegis series is a Skittermander wearing this armor, and it's great. And then you have a vest. There's a Barathu thin plate. There's just, it's so good. Like I like this game recognizing that its members have different body types and not being afraid to show us what gear for those ancestries look like. It's very good. Hey, this version of the game has shields core and they don't break the game.
Yay!
Hooray! I like the face shield projecting a picture of Dai because they're canonically a pop star, so it doesn't matter who has it. It's just a thing.
That's just awful though.
Like, hi, it's me. Hit me instead of that guy. I'm singing.
But then, like, you die and it's still just there, like playing a song. Like, it's horrifying.
And then, of course, you have the list of weapons. I am a big fan of the Buzzblade. As you know, my soldier in first edition Starfinder in Dead Suns only wielded Buzzblades until I got the big Buzzblade that needed two hands, and that was really good. Happy to see it back. I also like the battle ribbon. It's just, if you want to hit people while looking fabulous, you can hit people with a rainbow ribbon. Show your pride, folks. It's great.
Reminds me of the, what is that? That Indian or South Asian weapon, the Umurqui?
Yeah. Umurqui. And do you know what also is nice? Like, I didn't realize how much I missed this in first edition, but in first edition, weapons are just kind of categorized by the type of damage they do. Mm-hmm. So like oh, here's a dimensional slice sword. But like, there's no special rules for this being a sword. And this brings the weapon groups from Pathfinder 2nd Edition forward. So now my Buzzblade belongs to the sword group. And there's a critical effect that I get because that weapon is a sword. And I like that. I also like battle gloves and poly gloves. And honestly, the weird weapons are my favorite. I like the phase cutlass.
We have somebody using the cross bolter in my playtest game. And they recently shot an innocent person and pinned them to the ground. And they love that.
Is that Peter?
No.
That sounds like Peter.
No. It's a new player. They did not mean to go that hard.
Oh, man. Okay. honestly, there's a lot of stuff that you would expect to see. What armor upgrades make a return. A lot of the classic favorites from the first edition Starfinder book are back, like glamour projectors. Basic environmental protections are an armor upgrade. You have to actually pay something to have those benefits. I kind of like that. I remember I did an adventure where I wanted to do there was like a noxious gas that was like affecting people. And they're like, I turn on my suit of armor. And I'm like, can I just like not this? And then Starfinder, it's like, oh, I like it. So I also think that the weapon upgrades are fun. There's an upgrade that makes your weapon an AI weapon, which I guess if I want my weapon to talk to me. And then you also have Solarian crystals are back, which I'm going to be honest with you. I have not read how they work, but I was like, those are a thing that exists.
Cool. Yay, options.
Options. And then you have like precious items. I like the grenades are back. The grenades are like a whole two page on them. There's lots of cool magic items. Did you have a favorite magic item that you saw?
No, I didn't go too far to them. I stopped at the weapons because I'm like, these pictures are pretty, and then I was like, I'll read about the magic later.
A lot of these I saw them and I was like, that's a name I recognize from first edition, thank you for bringing this back. But then there's also a lot of cool ones that are brand new. Like, yeah, I'm always gonna like dermal plating and data jacks, but also maybe sometimes I just want to be able to take a cognition accelerator. I'm like, I don't know what that does. That sounds cool.
It sounds like brain go fast.
Yeah, it sounds like brain goes fast. So one of the things you should know is this system has what's called apex augmentations. An apex item in either edition, whether you're talking Pathfinder or Starfinder, is one that sets your ability score to a specific number. Mm-hmm. They are high level. They tend to be like level 17 plus. And you have, I think you can only wear like one of them. So like, you don't really see a lot of them. Like the game is very generous with its ability scoring. So you don't really need them quite as much, but they are quite good. And usually they're balanced around, if you want the stat, you can have the stat. But if you already have the stat, we'll give you more. Mm-hmm. And I like that.
Yeah.
Would you like, but you said you talked about magic, right?
No. Oh, I looked over the magic rules. I did not look at spells.
Ah. Didn't look at spells.
No.
Not even with that cool picture of Chick-Chick, like, doing, like, creepy cultist things. I'm never sure what, like, what Chick-Chick's alignment would be if he was in first edition and alignment still existed. But I hope that he's a good boy.
Probably neutral.
Probably neutral boy. I like that the magic traditions are back. I think that having arcane, occult, divine, and primal brings a lot of flavor to the system that was lost when it was just, like, Technomancer versus Mystic versus whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that coming back. And basically, like, the first couple sections just explain how to magic, and that's all good. And then the second section is, here's a giant list of spells. Here's, like, 500 spells. Mm-hmm. Enjoy. I don't know. I didn't count them. Don't quote me on 500. I could be wrong, but, like, I'm flipping and I've gone 10 pages and it's still just the list. So, like, yeah, there's got to be,
like I said, here. There's a lot of beautiful spells. I didn't bother learning all of them because it'll matter when I actually have to make a character.
Yeah. I'm going to talk. There's also, like, a lot of spells that are reprints from Pathfinder that they kind of needed.
Yeah.
So, like, animal form is basically, like, line for line a reprint. They don't have any new animals for it. But
No animals.
Well, I mean, like in a game where you would expect, like, oh, are there actually sharks on this planet? Are there deer on Polonis? Like, I guess. But a lot of times what they'll do is, like, in future stuff, they'll add ways to add forms to these. So I imagine that we'll see lots of weird alien stuff down the line.
Yeah.
I assume
Haste is a reprint and stuff, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Basically, if something looks like it belongs in a Pathfinder museum, then it's probably from a Pathfinder museum.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'll notice that a lot of the spells use their updated second edition Pathfinder remaster names because they legally have to. And it's good. There's a lot of funny ones, though. I like Cozy Crash Pad. That's a fun spell. It's basically Tiny Hut, but it's a crash pad. And I like that. It's fun. Death Sentence is a fun spell. And I mean, obviously, dragon form is from Pathfinder, but I want to be a space dragon. So.
I mean, you could just be a space dragon.
If you've ever wanted to play a warlock in this edition, Eldritch Lance is how you do it. Just take your Eldritch Lance and you lance people. That's the rule.
Eldritch Lance.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because Eldritch Lance is a divine and occult spell, so wizards can't lance people, but clerics can.
Well, of course, because somebody else gives you the power, right?
Yeah, they give me the power to lance you. It's very good. And I think maybe I'll do a couple more spells that I thought were fun.
I mean, like I see Massacre here, and I love Massacre as a spell.
Oh, you mean you unleash a wave of death to snuff out the life force of those in its path?
Yes.
And it says, it's 96 void damage if they pass on a success. If they fail, they take 100. That's a big difference. Like if you roll max damage, that wouldn't be half of the failure. And then if they critically fail, they just die. Mm-hmm. Goodbye. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yep. It's brutal.
Yeah, Metamorphosis is fun. It's basically a ninth level version of, like, True Polymorph from Pathfinder, where you just pick any polymorph form you could possibly choose from your spell list and just turn into it. Enjoy. Yeah, no, I mean, like, the spells are good. Like, they're fun. If you're looking for a spell that will end the game by itself, like what you would get in not even Starfinder, because Starfinder First Edition magic was kind of...
It existed.
Not great. Yeah, it existed. I think magic is actually in a better... So if you're coming from Pathfinder First Edition, magic is going to feel less impactful than in Pathfinder First Edition. But if you're coming from Starfinder First Edition, I would say magic probably feels like a bigger part of your character and is more impactful. I feel like you have a lot more you can do in this system, which is a weird thing to say. I guess perspective is everything.
Yeah, perspective is totally everything. I mean, First Edition Starfinder, you just didn't take spells that you had to impact other people with because the saves were brutal.
I have a player who is playing a Witch Warper in my 19th level Teenage Wasteland game, and she absolutely hates playing magic because she feels like I don't get to do anything, everything passes their saving throws, and then I get to watch the soldier and the Solarian do 500 damage and with three full attacks.
Yep.
And like, yeah. Yeah, I see what they mean.
I mean, it's just spell selection. Starfinder, you have to be a lot more cognizant of your spell selection and what you're fighting.
Yeah, it's definitely not something for beginners in that section. And I think this is a little bit more forgiving because spells are, like, you're still going to have problems if you only pick fortitude save spells, for example.
Functions better. Also, like with the playtest group, I've been running, because the rules for players and NPCs are different anyway, that players only get crit if their AC gets beat by 15 or higher, or it's a nat 20.
Yeah.
And that is toned down a lot of the spikiness of the game so far.
Yeah. So we have Oyman in chat is asking if a carcinization made it in. And yes, it did. It is a fifth level spell. It has the incapacitation, manipulate, and polymorph traits. It is a primal spell with a range of 30 feet. You manipulate the target's genetic code and accelerate the inevitable, pressuring the target to undergo carcinization and become a crab. A willing target fully transforms into a crab as if it had cast animal form heightened to the same rank as this spell using the following statistics. Unwilling targets must instead attempt a fortitude saving throw. On a critical success, they're unaffected. On a success, their body gains minor features of a crab, its appendages turning into claws and causing it to become clumsy one. On a failure, the target transforms partially into a crab-like being, becoming clumsy one, stupefied one, and sickened one. And on a critical failure, the target is transformed into a partial crab-like being and becomes clumsy two, stupefied two, and sickened two. So you can either accept crab and get a buff, or you can resist crab and be debuffed.
Also, I didn't realize fly with a fourth level spell. That's kind of high up there.
Yeah, it's a little high.
For a game with jetpacks.
Well, yeah, definitely. And I think that there are a lot of ways to get it sooner than that. I think that it's okay for technology to do stuff better than magic because it explains it's a good. So like one of the things that Starfinder First Edition liked to do is that it would frequently say, oh, we don't need a light cantrip because people just use flashlights. But I think that if you have both and you show people that, oh, this daylight spell is third level, but I can go to Walgreens and buy a flashlight for 10 credits. That's narrative storytelling built into the class. You know what I mean? Sure, like, sure. It's a way that the mechanics can tell a story. It's like, oh man, it's hard for me to make magic by doing this, but battery go burr. I like that. And I hope that they do more of that going in the future.
Yeah. And then we go into focus spells, which, once again, yeah. Me not reading spells, don't know much about. Alex, tell me what a focus spell is.
So if a class gives you a spell-like ability in Starfinder, it gives you a focus spell. It's basically a spell that comes from your class or, like, a feat or something that you have. So, like, you'll see that one of them is, like, on page 380, you have the technology domain. And so both of those spells are focus spells that come from having the technology domain. When you gain the technology domain, you gain the level one spell. It'll say that in the description for that. Mm-hmm. And if you gain the advanced domain feat, then you get the level four spell. That's essentially what it is. Oh, so you get stuff from precogs. There's stuff from mystics. But honestly, like anything that is remotely magical and the class uses focus points, you typically will have this. Focus points tend to be restricted to the spellcasting classes, period. I kind of wish that more classes got them because I think, but it is what it is. In Pathfinder Second Edition, monks get focus points, and they can do like monk like the Qigong stuff with it, which is cool. So like I hope to see some like Solarian stuff in the future if there aren't many. You know.
And then there's rituals. They exist.
Rituals are basically if a spell would do a big powerful thing in Pathfinder that takes like 10 minutes to cast, it's probably a ritual in Starfinder. Mm-hmm. So like atonement, animating an object, awakening an animal, binding an outsider, communing with a god, controlling the weather, resurrection. Yeah, these are all examples of rituals. They are all uncommon, you'll see. That means that in general, they are not available unless you seek out somebody who knows it and they teach you. Or the GM gives it to you as like a story reward or something. So it does mean that resurrecting people with the resurrection ritual is harder because you need to find somebody who has it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fun stuff. And then chapter 8 is all about the core rules of how to play the game. We're not going to go over it too much. I think that in general, if you've played Pathfinder 2nd Edition, you will play this. And, you know, it's the same rule set. So if you want us to go over how to play the game a little bit more, you should join us at nodirectionpodcast.com and hop in to our Discord and let me and James know, hey, I'd really appreciate if you go over how to play the game. But we are not going to go over that. If you want my opinion, I think reading and playing at the table is a better way to learn than having me tell it to you and watching other people in actual plays.
Yeah, 100%. I will say in this book, I feel like the conditions list is either just formatted better or I'm just a grown-up who's not, you know, a grognard. But the list of conditions in this book, I think, is presented really well.
I think it's good.
Yeah, I think all your rules for what things are in sizes and blasts and areas and durations, I think that's all great.
I like how they took Reactive Strike out of a class and they put it in the core rules section as a thing that people do. Because in Pathfinder 2nd Edition, Reactive Strike was a fighter class feature. And then everything else would be like, you gain Reactive Strike from this feat. And it's like, why is this a class feature if everybody's going to get it at level 6 from a feat? Like, yeah. Just put this in the core rules and make this a thing that's there. And just say you need a feat to access this or an ability.
Yeah, 100%.
There's a lot of really fun afflictions in this book. I don't know if you've seen them.
No, I kind of saw that, and then I looked at the light, and then I'm like, man, they do a lot of stuff that plays with light levels, a rule that a lot of people forget.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I'm looking through this now, and there's not a ton of, like, specific examples. It just tells you how they work. Mm-hmm. It's probably because this is player core, and this is a book that you're supposed to use to play the game. I bet GM core is going to have a ton of really cool
things. You're going to give people leprosy. Let's go.
I love giving people leprosy. It's my favorite. Actually, I'm doing Starfinder now for first edition, and I'm going to decouple their bodies in turn. It's going to be fun.
Ooh, that sounds expensive. Horrible.
It is. I had the player role. Like, you remember the last time you fought these? Yeah. I was like, what spell did you need to save yourself from this? It was break enchantment, but I couldn't learn it. You just hit level 12. I just hit level 12, and I can change a spell slot for a new one. I'm going to learn break enchantment. Very funny. And then after that you get the glossary and index, which is basically a list of words throughout the book that you can find definitions for, and they tell you where to find the ruling in the book. It's kind of like a short rule, and then you go find the long.
Yeah.
I like the glossary. It's one of my favorite innovations from the second edition version of these games. So that is a extremely deep but also broad overview of the Starfinder second edition core rulebook. James, what do you think?
You know, I like it. I like it more than I thought I would, and I can't wait to get a softbound cover like the mini rule book. Hopefully when that eventually comes out publicly, please.
I think when we were told about this and we saw the first couple things, like if you remember when we did that soldier video and we had Jenny and Thirsty on and it got like a little heated in here, I was definitely worried about them stripping away Starfinder, and I feel like from a combination of hearing the fans really loving the setting and the game and also like taking in a lot of really important feedback throughout the whole process, I think this is a great game. I would want to play it more before I could decide whether I like this or first edition better. Cause I would say that, you know, I was talking with people in our Discord, and in general, when you talk about Pathfinder, I would rather play a first edition game, but I'd rather run a second edition game because man, oh man, running a first edition game is hard.
Yeah.
And I think in Starfinder, like you said, many times in the show, the additions, the jump between 1E Starfinder and 2E Starfinder is not quite as big. And like, this feels a lot more like Starfinder to me than Pathfinder 2E can feel like 1E sometimes. Yeah. Like I said, it still feels like Pathfinder, but not 100%. But this one is like, I just like, oh, it's a Starfinder. So yeah. I'm really happy. I think that the designers did a great job. All the designers that are watching, thank you for doing an amazing job and holding our game with reverence and respect, which is really the thing that James and I have always been advocating for over the past 2 years.
Yeah, just keep it Starfinder, Starfinder.
Yeah, keep Starfinder, Starfinder. Let's go. Speaking about keeping Starfinder, Starfinder, there's some news stuff going on. I mentioned before that I picked up my copy of Murder at Metal City. It's cool. I like it. And I've seen that, you know, James, there's actually a lot of there's a lot of discourse about Murder at Metal City that like people are being dramatic about it.
Oh, maybe that's a maybe that's a next thing because we're past time.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're probably right. Until next time, when maybe we'll talk about Murder City or maybe we'll talk about GM Core.
Maybe both.
Go beyond. No direction.
Oh, I gotta flip it to the other screen. Oh, I'm boosted.
Oh no.